Production. Recorded live.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Pastor Eli James here with another installment of Christogenos. And with me this evening is William Fink. How are you doing tonight, Bill?
Great. Praise Yahweh.
Yeah, praise Yahweh. And we're going to continue in our long series on two seed line in the New Testament. And I would have to say it's pretty incredible. In fact, I've got a quote here later on if we get to the proper verses. I'm actually going to quote from Parthia by Stephen M. Collins. Yes, yeah, and, you know, he obviously makes a huge mistake by equating the Jews with the tribe of Judah, okay?
Yeah.
That error runs throughout all of his writing.
Parthia is probably one of the few things he gets right.
Yeah, yeah, right. But at the end of this book, he has a very good analysis of the trial of Christ and how illegal it was, you know? I just happened to glance through it today, and I said, wow, this section of the book is actually pretty good. So if we get that far tonight, you know, I'll have a couple of quotes from him. But I just want to back up a little bit here, because I know you covered Matthew chapter 25 last week, and I just want to reiterate, because it's very important that people understand exactly what Yahshua Messiah is saying here in verses 31 and 32, where he talks about separating the sheep from the goats, okay? And so I'm just going to quote these two verses. Verse 31, when the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory, okay? And we're talking about the judgment day here. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. And of course, and then it says, and then he shall set the sheep on his right hand and the goats on his left. And, of course, the sheep are always a reference to Israel. They're never a reference to any other people.
Well, of course, the sheep, the story of the lost sheep starts in Ezekiel chapter 34.
Right, right. And the sheep represent Israel, as does the olive tree and the two candlesticks or candelabra. These are all symbolic of Israel. They're not symbolic of any other people. And you can't incorporate non-Israelites into these images.
Right. And both the priests of the Levites and Yahshua Christ himself are often referred to as shepherds in Old Testament prophecy.
Yes, absolutely.
And shepherds rule over sheep.
Right.
They don't.
Yeah. And so I was in a chat room a few years ago where I basically argued that this is a racial division. That you know, Yahshua is going to separate his people, which are the white Anglo-Saxon Celtic Caucasian people, on one hand, and you know, the rest of the world on the other hand. And she said, "No, that can't be. It's believers."
Right? Yeah, right. Well, they're nations. Why
right.
Are they nations?
I pointed out that word "nations" to her. That doesn't say believers. It says nations, folks. And you know, it's amazing. You know, people, these Judeo-Christians can read these verses and, you know, to totally ignore what's actually being said, because they have this image in their mind that it's talking about believers and non-believers. It's not talking about any such thing.
It's bad enough they try to spiritualize sperm.
Yeah, right.
And if you impregnate enough women, you end up with a nation of people.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And they all the word nation in Latin, it comes from the Latin word natus, which means to be born.
Right.
It's related to your genealogy.
They should all be believers.
The Greek word is ethnos, and that's
right.
The word that we get ethnicity from. You can't spiritualize that.
No, you can't. You can't. And so that's what these people do. They spiritualize and redefine, according to their own belief system, what the Bible's saying, and you can't do that. You can't do that and be honest. You just can't. You know, and I'm sure in the Greek language, there's never any spiritualization of the word ethnos. Any...
Well, absolutely not. It's, you know, or the word sperma. These things would be unheard of to a Greek in the first century to take those words to mean anything than what they do.
Yes.
Sperma
yes.
comes from one place, and ethnos is a nation, and that's it.
That's right. So that interpretation is nothing but modernist heresy. It cannot be taken seriously. Okay.
Right, it's Freud could have concocted it.
Yeah, there you go. Freudianity.
Like
there we go.
I'd really, unless you have something else to say about Matthew 25, I'd like to recap. I mean, since we raised the topic, I'd like to recap what I said last week about it.
Okay, sure.
I mean, if you don't mind.
No, not at all.
The judgment between the sheep nations and the goat nations is not merely a New Testament admonition.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't something that's new to the New Testament. In Ezekiel 34:17, Yahweh says, "And as for you, O my flock, thus saith Yahweh God, behold, I judge between cattle and cattle, between the rams and the he-goats."
Mm-hmm.
That's the same as Yahshua Christ saying that he'd separate the sheep from the goats.
Right. Mm-hmm.
To judge between one type of cattle and another type of cattle.
Yeah, and there's
because
no,
not all the cattle belong in the flock.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any dispensationalist who has ever argued that the Old Testament should be spiritualized.
And, right, and, none of them.
Yeah, and the reason why is because they give the Jews credit for being Israelites, and of course the Jews claim to be the Israelites in the flesh. There's no spiritualization of the Old Testament, and so, as I said earlier, you've got that same imagery in the Old Testament as you do in the New Testament.
Right, but it also applies to the same people.
That's right, exactly.
There's a replacement theology fails at every turn.
Yes, yeah. You have to well, for one thing, there's no such verse anywhere in Scripture that says the literal Israel will become spiritual Israel. I mean, in fact, I even looked that up. I went on to, I forget which program, an online program, Search the Bible, you know. And so I put in the phrase, spiritual Israel. And, of course, it says not found. Okay.
Right.
It's not in the Bible, folks. There's
right,
no such
expression.
Right,
absolutely
not. Yeah.
I'd like to recap what I said last week and say that Paul more or less commended the Romans in Romans chapter 2 for creating a society based on the rule of law.
Okay.
Which is a reflection of that law written in their heart.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore a fulfillment of the prophecy of Jeremiah chapter 31.
Okay, very good.
No society is formed from the top down.
Mm-hmm.
As Thomas Jefferson told us, governments can only exist with the consent of the governed. Some peoples are capable of forming civil societies based upon the rule of law and respect for one's fellow man.
Mm-hmm.
Other societies are not capable. Other peoples are not capable of that.
Right.
The non-white peoples on this planet generally live by the law of the jungle,
mm-hmm.
while the white nations generally live by the law of Yahweh.
Yes.
Surely not all of us are perfect, but we are able to have a society because most of us are good most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us are good nearly all of the time. Here in Matthew 25, Yahshua is talking about nations and not necessarily individuals.
Right.
And he's using a series of examples, and it's evident that there are nations who generally do his will.
Yes.
And most
yes.
other peoples do not. Visit the sick, care for the poor, take care of widows, give shelter to orphans. These things require hospitals, charities, nursing facilities, child care centers, schools, and
mm-hmm.
orphanages.
Mm-hmm.
Only the white man has ever founded those institutions.
That's right. That's right.
No other race has ever founded those institutions until the white man came along and made them found those institutions at gunpoint.
Yeah, not to mention representative government.
Well, right.
Yeah.
I mean, this is all about Adamic society. It's
right.
not about the other races of the world.
Right.
The Hutus never built a school.
Right, right. Or had representative government. The blacks, the Latinos, all those other, they only have dictatorships. That's all they ever have.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and without our example, you know, Japan is still a monarchy, as I understand.
Well, right, but even Japan, all of the other races in this world exist just one blind eye away from total savagery.
That's right.
Every one of them.
Yes.
The white man packs up and leaves, and tomorrow the Japanese, as soon as the Jews pull their money out of the markets, the Japanese are savages tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
There's no doubt. They're all stabbing each other with swords and stealing from each other, just like they were in the 1700s when we found them.
Oh, they have a polite way of doing it, though. They bow to each other before they hack each other to pieces.
Yeah. Well, at least in the movies.
Yeah, right, in the movies. Okay. Yeah, the white race is the only race that has ever established any kind of representative form of government. And it's because there's something about in our spirit that was given to us, predicted to be in us in Jeremiah 31:31-37. And, of course, the Judeo-Christians never want to touch that verse. And, of course, the Jews don't want to touch that verse either, because it's fulfilled in our people only.
Yeah, even though Paul cited it twice directly and alluded to it quite often also.
Uh-huh, yes. Yes,
and they'd rather pervert the words of Paul and avoid that verse.
Oh yeah, well yeah, that's the specialty of our Saturday night shows. If anybody hasn't attended the Saturday night show, that's number 21924, and we've been talking about Paul and how the mainstream churches have been butchering the language of Paul. Okay, any further stuff on Matthew 25?
No, I'm done with it.
Okay, good, very good verse. Or chapter 26, verse, I'll just quote, run through 1 through 5 here. And it came to pass, when Jesus had finished all these sayings, he said to his disciples, "You know that after 2 days is the feast of Passover, and the Son of Man is betrayed," or is to be betrayed, "to be crucified. Then assembled together the chief priests and the scribes and the elders of the people to the palace of the high priest, who was called Caiaphas, and consulted that they might take Jesus by subtlety and kill him." Okay? And, you know, it's not talking about the Romans here, is it?
Absolutely not. This is the Jews. This is, you know, last week I discussed the parable of the vineyard workers in Matthew 21 or Luke 29-16, and how the vineyard workers represented the Canaanite, Edomite Jews,
mm-hmm.
who were not the heirs. If they were the heirs, then they would have been children.
Right, right.
And instead of husbandmen, and their long-running conspiracy, which they had against Yahweh, the owner of the vineyard.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the theme of the parable says that he'll send many servants who were the prophets, and they killed the prophets.
Right.
And then he sends the son, who's Yahshua Christ, and they killed him because they want the inheritance.
Right, exactly.
They want to eliminate all presence of God in this world.
Right.
That's their goal. And even to kill him when he comes as a man, which was planned anyway.
Yes.
There's no redemption for the children of Israel if Jesus Christ doesn't die on the cross.
Right, right. Yeah, and as I think we discussed about previous the episodes earlier in Matthew, especially where Herod the Edomite, upon hearing of the birth of the Messiah, his first thought was to kill him.
And they understood the implication of that.
Right.
Right. That's Matthew 2:3. They were immediately in fear of the announcement of his birth.
Right.
While it is evident that many others joyfully anticipated it.
Yes, yes. And if Herod were actually a Judahite, he would have been overjoyed at the news.
Absolutely.
Right.
Redemption for Israel.
Exactly.
Well, last thing Herod, an Edomite king who is oppressing Israel, wants to hear is redemption for Israel.
That's right. they want to keep us under their thumb.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And that's the Jews today. The last thing they want to hear is anything about Christianity.
That's right.
And the possibility of the return of a Christ.
Right.
Of a higher authority that they would have to answer to. They don't want to answer to anybody except themselves, their own Messiah.
Exactly, exactly. Southern California, you got a comment or question?
Yeah, just a little, on this one thing, I have something else to say, is it appears like when Herod was here, the Jews were in power just like
yes.
they are today, and they didn't want to relinquish power because Jesus came at that time, but he didn't come with all the power, and this time he's coming with
yes.
like a king, and they know it, and they don't want to relinquish power. That's why they're doing what they're doing. But the one thing that you guys brought up earlier, and I called at the time, but you went on down the road, was... you said that the Old Testament
the
talks about the Jews, and everybody thinks the Jews are God's
right.
chosen people in the flesh, so we don't talk about the Old Testament too much. Well, they also, in the churches today, call the Old Testament dead.
Yes.
In other words, the laws are dead. They've been hung on the cross. All of you, they forgot that the guy on the cross rose from the dead.
Yeah, he was the law, and he was reborn,
thought maybe
wasn't he?
I might talk about that a little bit, because
okay.
if they consider the Old Testament, you know, it's the Jews, And then they say that the Old Testament's dead. In other words, the laws are dead. It must have something to do with those Jews are dead, too.
Right. Well, yeah, a very good point, Gary. Yeah, because if the Old Testament law is no longer in effect, why give the Jews any respect at all?
Yeah, see, I thought maybe you guys might want
right.
to say a little bit about that, because I'm going to hang up and listen to you.
All right. Okay, all right, thanks, Gary. Yeah.
Bless.
Well, yeah, the dispensationalism, is, as you mentioned earlier, Bill, it's just a bundle of contradictions.
Well, it's a bundle of contradictions, and they really do attempt to dispense with half of Scripture.
Right.
And they do not take Scripture as a whole. They
yeah.
they do not accept it as constant. That they want to pervert the will of and the word of Yahweh to their will.
That's right.
It's men forming God after themselves, after
mm-hmm.
their image.
Yeah, and so they're doing exactly what the Jews do, don't they?
Absolutely. Somebody posted a message in my forum, and somebody's debating with me over the nature of Yahshua Christ
okay.
in the forum at Christogenia, and he actually quoted one of these I can't remember his name already.
Dispensationalist?
But yeah, he quoted a dispensationalist who was also a friend of the Jews and a personal friend of Herzl, the Zionist.
Oh, yeah, right.
And this guy gets all his books out there, and a lot of people in identity quote this man's books. And I'm sorry, I'm going to have to go to my forum for a minute
yeah.
to get his name. But I can't believe that people in identity do not study the people who they get. There's
oh, you're talking about Armstrong?
No, I'm talking about Bullinger.
Oh, Bullinger. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Bullinger was a personal friend of many Jews, and he was a personal friend of the Zionist, the founder of modern Zionism, Theodor Herzl.
Right.
And he writes this Bible with all these comments. It gets well published. It's on all the bookstore shelves.
Yes, right.
And it's there because the Jews want it there.
Right.
Anybody, Bullinger or that other clown, that Cyrus, what's his face? And
Schofield.
Schofield. I'm sorry, I don't read these things,
yeah.
but I know about these people.
Yeah.
And anybody who's popular, who gets promoted by all of the Jewish publishing outlets and all of the Jewish bookstores, they can't possibly be telling you the truth.
That's right.
They're on those shelves because the damn Jews want them on those shelves to fool the sheep.
That's
period.
Right.
And people in identity should learn to stop following those clowns.
Well, it brings up the question, and I get this question all the time, is, you know, what version of the Bible is there that's reliable and, you know, for Christian identity? And there really is none. You know, fortunately, you have translated the New Testament. We've got people working on the Old Testament, but that's a huge undertaking. And you just have to realize that the dispensationalist mindset is pervasive in the translations of the Old Testament and New Testament. You just have
absolutely.
To,
and
yes.
the Masoretic text and all the thinking of the Jews.
Yes, yes.
And most of those people are just apologists for the
right.
Jews.
And the Jews are very happy for the dispensationalists to teach replacement theology as long as these people don't question whether or not the Jews are Israelites or not. Okay? They're happy with that, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Just don't you dare question whether or not they are Israel or Judah.
Yeah, dispensationalism is the Jews' best friend.
Exactly. Exactly. Because it gives the Christians an excuse to say, okay, well, Jesus, you know, they rejected Jesus, but they will eventually. Okay. No, they won't. They
absolutely
will
not. If Yahshua Christ in the flesh could not convert the Jews.
Yeah.
And what about the parable of the rich man and Lazarus? And Lazarus was, you know, the rich man represents the average Jew.
Yes.
And he has five brothers, and they're all wealthy,
yes.
and he asks Lazarus to, you know, to return from the dead and speak to his brothers, and you know, the morale of the parable is that even though one returns from the dead, and Yahshua means himself by that,
mm-hmm.
they will not believe.
That's right. They will not believe.
If he couldn't do it, anybody that thinks they
yeah.
could do it is a straight idiot.
Right, right. Yeah, well, if he couldn't do it the first time, why would he bother with him the second time?
Right, absolutely.
These people
but
murdered
I mean, these,
me, folks.
These evangelicals are they have a religion based on on pride and ego that they could do something that Yahshua Christ himself couldn't do.
That's right.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy. Hey, you know what? You haven't heard this guy preach. Pastor so-and-so, his preaching is so good, he's going to convert those Jews.
Yeah, right. Like he could be better than Yahshua himself.
Yeah, right. Of course, they pay him.
And Yahshua spoke in parables, so they wouldn't understand.
That's right. That's right. Okay, Matthew 26, verses 14 through 16. Is that where we're going?
Well, I wanted to discuss this conspiracy against Christ was from his birth.
Okay.
And we see it in Matthew 12:14. They sought to entrap him.
Okay.
Although he never actually committed a crime.
Right.
And they would have killed him outright if it were not for the numbers of his followers whom they thought would seek justice from the Romans.
Mm-hmm.
That's who the Jews feared. They feared the Romans.
Right.
And they had to wait for the opportune time to have him executed,
right,
where the Romans would go along with it or not.
Yeah, or look the other way.
Right.
Yeah.
And in John, it's summed up in John 11:47-53. Then the high priest and the Pharisees gathered a council and said, "What do we do, seeing that this man makes many signs? If we should leave him thusly, they shall," meaning the people, "shall all believe in him, and the Romans shall come, and they shall take both our place and our nation."
Right.
They're concerned only with their own comfortable living and their control over this nation.
Exactly.
With their own station in life. That's all they care about.
Mm-hmm.
And the pretense that they have power and authority.
Right, right. Yeah, and they were in a delicate position because the priesthood, the scribes and Pharisees, were actually serving as the tax collectors for the Romans. You know, so it was, I scratch your back, you scratch mine, okay? So they couldn't, they didn't want to, but that gave them power over the Judean people, okay?
Well, actually, the way the system worked was Herod being king.
Yes.
He would have to pay the Romans a certain amount every year in tribute.
Right.
An amount assigned by Rome.
Yes.
Now, he would take that, and he would sell a contract to tax farmers,
mm-hmm,
and they would all be his fellow Edomites and his buddies and,
sure,
and you know, insiders,
mm-hmm,
and he would actually make a little profit on the deal,
right.
Okay? And the tax farmers would go out and oppress the people and collect everything they could so that,
yes,
they could pay off Herod, and usually they collected much more than what they had to pay Herod, who in turn had to pay it to the Romans.
Right, right. Yeah, so they made a profit on the deal, and then this is how, you know, the Pharisees and, you know, of course, all the Herodians became rich. And incidentally, I find no evidence in the entire Old Testament anywhere or in the Apocrypha or in any other literature that the Judahites or Israelites ever practiced usury. So where did these moneylenders come from that Jesus drove out of the temple?
Well, they came from Babylon. Their financial code is based on the Babylonian Shetar, and it's an age-old antichrist. It's an anti-Christian financial,
right,
code.
And Herod brought in priests from Babylon. That's,
well,
where
absolutely
it came from.
But I mean, the Edomites had been,
yes,
the Babylonian religion is probably Kenite in origin. A lot of the Babylonian practices are probably Kenite in origin.
Mm-hmm.
And the Edomites, and, you know, they're all one big happy family. They're all intermarried, the Edomites and the Canaanites and the Kenites. They would have had the same culture, just like the Australians, the English, the Canadians, and the Americans have the same.
Right.
I mean, basically, yeah, the same language and culture.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just more proof that the moneylenders were outsiders. They were not Judahites or Benjaminites or any other kind of Israelite. They were Babylonian Edomites. That's who they were.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's,
yeah,
no doubt. And,
yeah,
and that's where they got their practices from, and that's who they are.
Yeah. Okay. So so obviously, all of these references, and of course, if you don't have a mindset, and of course, contrasting our position with dispensationalism, we read the New Testament knowing that these Edomites are lurking all over the place, and they're really oppressing the people in a secretive way, you know. At the same time, they're pretending to be the legitimate priesthood.
Right, and everything they did was to oppress the people.
That's
they
right.
were the Nicolaitans of their time, the
right.
people conquerors of their time.
And we got the same thing going on with the Zionists in America today, with the Judeo-Christians thinking, well, because they're Jews, they're God's chosen people, so, you know, give them cut them some slack. They arrange wars in which Christians die and, you know, fighting each other, and they make the profit. And they're still God's chosen people. Well, cut them some slack.
Well, they're chosen for destruction. That's what
that's
they're chosen
right.
for.
That's right. Absolutely. Okay. Anything else here on, you know?
No. Just to illuminate that this is a long running conspiracy, and it's been from the time Christ was born, and from the time he started his ministry, that they sought to conspire to kill him.
Right. Right.
They were immediately jealous of him.
Right.
He won people over instead of forcing people over. And they hate that right away anyway.
Sure, sure.
And,
yeah,
and we see that in their nature today. Everything in the nature of the Pharisees, of the Edomite Pharisees in the time of Christ, we can see in Rahm Emanuel,
that's right.
in Chuck Schumer, in Barbara Boxer, in Dianne Feinstein. These people have the same exact nature
yes.
as the Pharisees and the Sadducees of the first century.
Yeah, they're petty tyrants, and once they are in a position of power, they abuse it. Period.
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. There's not one Jewish politician or moneylender or bureaucrat in history, a corporation exec that I know of, that has ever done anything good.
Well, right. And look at Dianne Feinstein is a perfect example. These people are righteous on the outside, and inside they're full of all rapacity and extortion.
Right.
Look at her husband. Look at what the Chinese have done to us. Look at what we've allowed the Chinese to do to us economically.
Yeah.
To manipulate their own currency, to not take any of our products. The products of ours that they use are software, intellectual property that they just steal.
Right.
They never pay for it.
Right.
They never pay. And her husband is making hundreds of millions of dollars on Chinese business deals.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody seems to care.
Right.
Except a few small, voiceless, right-wing extremist news outlets.
Right, right. Well, because the courts are run by Jews, so you know he's not going to be prosecuted, just like these two Israeli spies who were, for exactly what you're talking about, giving technology to the Chinese, and when Obama came in, they just quietly dropped the case.
Right, they've been giving out technology to the Chinese for
30 years.
Since 1948.
Yeah.
And probably before that, but we didn't know it.
Right.
But we didn't realize it. This has been a problem that's from the dawn of time.
Right.
And it's the same people behind it every
exactly.
time.
Exactly. The leopard has not changed its spots. Okay. Verses 14 through 16. Then one of the 12, called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and said to them, "What will you give me, and I will deliver him to you?" And they covenanted with him for 30 pieces of silver, and from that time he sought opportunity to betray him. Okay,
Judas,
who is this character, Judas Iscariot?
Judas Iscariot. Iscariot is a Hellenization of the Hebrew words Ish and Kerioth,
right.
or man of Kerioth.
Right.
There's absolutely no other explanation for the term.
Right.
It's indubitable.
Right.
There were two towns named Kerioth in ancient Palestine. One was in Moab, and another one was in southern Judea near the border of Edomia.
Right.
The Edomites had moved into southern Judea en masse after the deportations of the Israelites
right.
in 580 B.C.
Right.
Or by 580 B.C. And it is nearly certain from all of that alone that Judas was an Edomite. And that's why he signified Iscariot.
Mm-hmm.
So that people would know what they were dealing with. Yahshua Christ in the book of John, in John 6:7, he says, "Have I not chosen you 12? Yet one from among you is a devil."
Mm-hmm.
Now, he spoke about Judas, and John says this. This is John, not me.
Right.
Now, he spoke about Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, for he was going to betray him, being one of the 12.
Right.
Yahshua had to come here to die. He knew he knew what was going to happen. He told the apostles in advance that he was coming here to die.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that he could only do that because he was Yahweh himself. However, The plan was for him to come here and die.
Right.
And to do that, he couldn't enlist only sheep in his ministry.
Right.
He had to have a wolf. He had to have one wolf on the staff.
Right.
And it's amazing. We look at almost every company in America has a Jewish treasurer, Jewish controllers. Everybody in charge of their finances is practically
Jewish lawyer.
A Jew.
Yeah.
Right. And in John 12:3-8, we see, then Miriam, taking a pound of pure ointment of spikenard of great value, anointed the feet of Yahshua and wiped his feet off with her hair. Now the house had been filled from the odor of the ointment. Then Judas Iscariot, one of his students, he who is going to betray him, says, for what reason has this ointment not been sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor? And John puts, but he said this not because he had care in him for the poor, but because he was a thief and carried the case holding the savings.
Right.
That meant that Judas, the devil out of the 12, was also the group treasurer.
That's right.
Okay.
Well, we have the Federal Reserve running America's finances right now, don't we?
Right. That's the unrighteous steward in charge of the good master's household.
That's right.
And all they're going to do is steal and pillage and
mm-hmm.
loot.
Yeah. And our people just don't understand what's happening. Just
That's
don't understand
do.
It. Yes.
So Judas is really, I mean, even though he's not an overt part of the conspiracy of the Pharisees against Yahshua, him being the nature that he is, he falls right into it and becomes their tool.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, Yahshua needed a close-up Edomite in order to demonstrate what they're like. That here's a man who walked with the Savior. How many miles, we don't know, but he walked with the Savior, and he still betrayed him.
Right. He followed his
mm-hmm.
genetic.
Yeah.
That's the essence of what he is.
Yeah, he saw the miracles. He saw the healings, and still he betrayed him.
Absolutely.
Because that reveals their character, reveals their nature.
And it shows
the children of the devil.
It shows you that no Edomite can possibly be converted.
That's right. That's right. I wish these evangelicals would finally understand this. You can't convert the devil.
Now, Judas wasn't, you know, Judas wasn't a devil because he betrayed Yahshua.
Right.
He was a devil long before he betrayed Yahshua.
Right. It was in his blood.
He betrayed Yahshua because he was a devil.
Exactly.
The church would have you believe the opposite.
Right. Right.
Just like they twist all the other prophecies around.
Right. Right. Yeah. And it's amazing that they've gotten the world to believe that they're God's chosen people. Of course, you know, it never occurs to the average Judeo-Christian that the devil might just come dressed in a priest's robe.
Right. Greg Howard asks about, what about Jews for Jesus? And Jews for Jesus only exist to pervert Christians for Jesus.
That's right.
That's all they want to do. That's why they exist. It's another false front.
Right.
It's another one of Satan's little games.
Right, right.
To play with people's heads. Oh, there are Jews that believe in Jesus. My butt.
Yes, right. Right. They don't believe in that Jesus was the Messiah. They simply see, well, when he comes a second time, it'll be our first time. Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's all part of the deception.
Right, right. And Christians fall for it. But you can't. The Old Testament prophesied in at least 300 passages the coming of the Messiah, and Yahshua fulfilled every one of them. No
Absolutely.
Jew has ever fulfilled any of them.
And there's, you know, even the mainstream Christians ignore the ones that the mainstream Christians that know all of the messianic prophecies.
Yes.
Can't get one of the prophecies about Israel right.
Right.
Even though they're evident in history over and over again.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Well, they're being deceived, and you know, they're being pointed down the wrong road. And you know, the further you go down that wrong road, the harder it is to come back to the right road. Okay. All right, verses 20 through 25. Now when the evening was come, he sat down with the 12. And as they did eat, he said, verily I say to you that one of you shall betray me. And they were exceeding sorrowful, and began every one of them to say to him, Lord, is it I? And he answered and said, he that dips his hand with me in the dish, the same shall betray me. The Son of Man goes as it is written of him, but woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It had been good for that man if he had never been born. Okay? There's no forgiveness here in Yahshua's statement, is there?
Well, because an Edomite can't be forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
There's no forgiving in Edom. There's no forgiving a son of Cain.
Right.
It's not possible.
Yeah, because they're unrepentant.
And they have no, if they do have spirits, those spirits we're told in the book of Enoch.
Right.
Are the wicked spirits upon the earth.
Yes.
The descendants of the mixture between the satanic fallen angels,
mm-hmm,
and the children of Adam are actually the result, the bastards are where evil spirits come from.
That's right.
So
that's
those right. Kenites, those Jews that have spirits, have evil spirits.
Right, and both Peter and Jude verify
that. They both verify that.
Yes.
They both quote that same section of the book of Enoch. They both accepted that as scripture.
Yes.
And so did Paul, but Paul alludes to it in several places but doesn't directly quote it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's see. Let me go back to verse 17. Now, the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the disciples came to Jesus saying to him, where will you that we prepare for you to eat the Passover? You have this in your notes. What is the comment on this, on verse 17?
I don't, I have my translation in front of me, but I have it in my notes just because it's part of Matthew 26. Not it's not highlighted in my notes.
Yes.
Except that he knows that his time is near.
Right.
You know, in verse, he says, go into the city and say to him, the teacher says, my time is near.
Mm-hmm.
He knows exactly what is going to happen to him.
Right.
There's
right.
no doubt he tells him several times on the road to Jerusalem that he's going to Jerusalem to die.
Right. Yeah, I don't think that they understood what he was talking about, though.
Well, no, and they weren't supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, that shows you, that is absolute clear proof that we believe, we can only believe what we see when Yahweh wants us to believe what we see.
Right.
And hear. When, you know.
Yes. He prepares.
He's telling them exactly what's going to happen to him, and they're not even paying any attention to it.
Right, right. Okay, verses 57 through 67. And they that had laid hold on Jesus, and there wasn't Judahites, it was Edomites, and they that had laid hold on Jesus led him away to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were assembled. Now, wasn't Caiaphas appointed by Herod? At one point, whatever authority the Judahites had to put place their people, our people, in as high priest was overtaken by Herod.
Well, right, but then it was overtaken by Rome.
Right.
It went, and by this time, the high priest, I mean, Herod did appoint a lot of the high priests, but by this time, I think that
okay.
the high priest has actually become an appointment of the Romans, if you read. If
okay.
Josephus makes that pretty clear. It's pretty much a,
okay.
you know, a fact of history.
Right,
the
right.
Romans began, they took that authority off one of the Herods, I think it was Archelaus, and they started appointing the high priest. However, they were appointing the high priest from the same group of Edomites and,
yes.
and you know, the scribes and the Pharisees.
Right, yeah.
And a lot of the high priests at this time, I'm not sure if this Caiaphas was, however, a lot of the high priests and the ones that were more vehement against the Christians were the Sadducees and not the Pharisees.
Okay.
And that's clear from the book of Acts. We could get it in the book of Acts.
Yeah.
And
well, yeah, they're like the Democrats.
Right, the Sadducees.
They're harder on us than the Jews are.
Absolutely, because the Sadducees did not believe in a spirit or in an afterlife.
Yes.
They were the hardened atheists of the day.
Right, liberals.
You know, they were the Hillary Clintons
right.
of their time.
Right, they were the liberals of the day. And, you know, the liberals hate our guts because we're racist and we're right-wing conspiracy nuts and we're constitutionalists. They don't understand.
Right. You can say traditional Christian and they think racist.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's their nature.
Yeah, that's right.
It comes natural to them. They are the evil ones.
Right. They're just as evil as the Jews are, no doubt. Yeah, they're like Esau. Esau before he married into the Edomites.
Right, and that's if most of them aren't there just because they have polluted blood. I mean,
right.
You know, the crypto-Jew theory.
Right.
And a lot of us that appear to be white probably do have polluted blood.
Mm-hmm.
But those people are very materialistic-based, goal-seeking,
right.
Money-making adventure. That's,
right.
You know, that's all they care about.
Yeah, if they are pure-blooded Israelites, they certainly bought into the system and sold their souls. There's no doubt
about
that.
And an example is Bill Gates. I mean, I don't know if he's a Jew for sure or not, but he would be an example, a perfect example of that.
Yes, yes.
He appears to be a good white Christian man on the surface.
Right, right. But he's good at Monopoly. He knows
right,
how to play that game. Guest 13 asks, is there a difference between the Adamites and the Ish people in the New Testament? Ordinarily, Adam is translated
no,
as man.
Ish is just a general type.
Yeah, Ish can mean non-Adamites as well. Okay,
and
but,
even, you know, I'd like to say that even Adamites at times are referred to as Enosh in
okay.
a derogatory sense.
Yes. Yes,
and
exactly.
They're Adamite. I mean, some of the patriarchs, if you look at the book of Genesis in Strong's Concordance or a Hebrew interlinear, you'll see that Enosh, it's a general word for man. Very often it is contrasted to Adam, because you can be an Enosh and not be an Adam, but you can't be an Adam and not be an Enosh.
Mm-hmm.
Because Enosh is a general word for
right.
a mortal man.
Right, right. Yeah, mortal. Yeah. Okay.
Which, you know, which in a sense we all are.
Right.
However, if we're Adam, that's a different story.
Right. Yeah. We're destined to be immortal, which Adam and Eve lost for us. All right. Well, that's ancient history, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, a better study to contrast the words. I mean, sometimes Adam and Enosh are opposed to each other in a psalm.
Yes.
And the writer definitely does that on purpose.
Yes.
However,
yeah.
A better study of the other four or five different words for stranger. Because the Ger is definitely not a Zur or a Nakri stranger.
Yeah, right.
You know, some of those words actually do infer a racial alien.
Yes, right. A Ger is
a
stranger of our own race.
Right, and that's how the word Xenos is to be taken in Greek, but they don't, you know,
mm-hmm.
translators of the Bible don't really,
right.
They don't appreciate that.
Right, yeah, the fine distinctions of both the Hebrew and Greek are lost on this translation, yes.
Right.
Okay, verse 58, but Peter followed him afar off to the high priest's palace and went in and sat with the servants to see the end. Now the chief priests and elders and all the council sought false witness against Jesus to put him to death. Now any indication that there's any Romans involved in this?
Oh, absolutely not. These Pharisees, they need some sort of charge of substance against Christ, but only to satisfy the members of the Sanhedrin or of the Judean council.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those are legitimate Judean men, and a lot of them are good and noble men.
Right.
And they want to actually persuade them not to protest what they're doing is basically
right.
what it boils
right.
down to.
Exactly.
They've made up their mind that Christ is going to die at this time.
Right.
And they just want to it's like a show trial.
Yes.
It's exactly what this is. It's illegal. It's in the middle of the night. There's certainly not a quorum or anything, you know, substantive there of members of the council in Judea. But these few members of this one particular sect are ramming this through, and
right.
they want to make it look like it was legitimate.
Yeah.
But it's absolutely illegal.
Like the Zionists rammed through the war against Iraq and the war against Afghanistan.
Right.
Even though the American
or the Nuremberg
trials
or the Stalinist show trials.
Yes.
I mean, this has happened over and over again in history.
Yes.
And every time there's Jews behind it.
That's right. That's right. Guest 13 asks a follow-up question on the Ish versus Adam, because when the New Testament uses the term all men, I would just quickly
say. Well, you know, in Romans chapter 5, Paul defines man. He defines man as Adam.
Right.
He makes a perfect equation of man being Adam.
Right.
Nobody that's not an Adam can be a man.
Right.
Period.
Yes. That's what we call ourselves. We're men, and the rest of the world are heathen.
Absolutely.
That's
Paul
right.
gives. Paul talks about the first man, Adam.
Right.
So if you're not an Adam, you're not a man.
Right.
And just because we happen to call those Zulus, Hutus, and Tutsis men doesn't make it right.
Right. Doesn't make them Adamites, that's for sure.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
They're male adults. They're not men in
right.
the sense of Adam.
Yes, and that's where the difference in
it's
and
our
Enoch.
Society that's been perverted by the Jews.
Sure, sure. They've broadened our language, yeah. Because yeah, there was a time, I remember well when I was growing up, we men didn't mate with blacks and other races. We just
absolutely
didn't.
Not, and they're not men. They weren't considered men in the 1700s.
Right, the founding fathers didn't consider them men either. That's right. Verse 60. But oh, let me just okay. Let me back up to 59 because there's a continuation of the thought here. Now the chief priests and elders and all the council sought false witness against Jesus to put him to death, but found none. Yea, though many false witnesses came, yet found they none. And the last came at the last came two false witnesses and said, "This fellow said, 'I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days.'" What is this false witness referring to here?
Well, he's referring to Christ using the temple metaphor to mean his own body.
Yes.
But he said he spoke in parables.
Right.
He told people what was going to happen ahead of time.
Yes.
And the apostles didn't even realize that he meant his body by the temple
right.
until after it happened.
Yes, yes.
And John explicitly explains that he meant his body by the temple.
Yes, surely, yeah. And Paul teaches the same thing, that
absolutely.
We are the temple of Yahweh, not those brick-and-mortar churches out
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. When Yahweh breathed his spirit into Adam, Adam became a temple of Yahweh.
Right. Absolutely.
And every Adamite is a temple of Yahweh.
That's right.
And Paul says now we are born a physical seed,
yes.
but raised a spiritual seed.
Right.
If
right.
you're not born of the right seed, you're not going to have that spirit when you grow up.
Right, right, yes. And you don't have to be born again.
No, absolutely
because you
not.
Have to be born from above, which is
exactly.
what it actually says.
And that's what, right, that's what the word says. It doesn't mean again in any by any means.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so this person was paid to bear false witness and to interpret a metaphor literally, and this kind of reminds me of what happened to Matt Hale, who was not condoning any violence on anyone, yet when he nodded his head, when the FBI agent that was prodding him said, "Maybe we should kill some Jews," and he may have nodded his head, he may not have, but he never said, "Yes, we should." He never said anything like that. Now he's sitting in jail.
Well, that's a typical case of Jewish entrapment, right?
That's right.
That's all they do. They entrap people. I know because I was entrapped.
Mm-hmm.
I was entrapped back in 1990, 95, 96.
Yes, and that's what this person is doing here, the false witness. Verse 62, "And the high priest arose and said to him, 'Answer you nothing? What is it which these witness against you?' But Jesus held his peace, and the high priest answered him and said to him, 'I adjure you by the living God that you tell us whether you be the Christ, the Son of God.'" Wow. "I demand that you tell us."
Yeah, absolutely. Because they wanted to get him for blasphemy. Which
right.
They wanted to charge him with blasphemy if he admitted that.
Right. Right.
So
even though if he had said it, he'd be true.
Well, right, but they didn't care about the truth.
Yeah, exactly. Jesus says to him, "You have said, nevertheless I say to you, hereafter shall you see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven." Man, he's looking forward to 2,000 years, isn't he?
Well, right, but then their response is he is blaspheming.
That's
well, what did he say wrong?
Yeah. Well, yeah, they will see the Son of Man. Did he say, "I am he"? Not
right.
to them, at least he didn't. He did say that to the woman at the well.
not from this. It's a straight conspiracy. They're only, you know, they had to ram something through and they'll make anything out. I mean, this is what prosecutors all over the country do today.
Right.
I'm not saying that every case brought to trial in this country is wrong, but I mean, a great number of cases are wrong.
Yes, yes. Well, that's why Paul advises us to settle our disputes among ourselves and not submit ourselves to the beast system.
Absolutely.
Yes. Verse 65, then the high priest rent his clothes, making a great demonstration, saying, he has spoken blasphemy. What further need have we of witnesses? Behold, now you have heard his blasphemy. How did he blaspheme?
He didn't blaspheme at all.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't blaspheme. They just, it's their last-ditch effort to get this ram through, to get most of the people on the council to agree with them.
Right, right.
And they'll use political cajoling and whatever they do to get
it
to be.
Yeah, and to interpret metaphors as if they were meant literally, which even if he weren't the Messiah in the flesh, they had no right to interpret literally.
Well, this is the same thing that happened in the build-up to the war on Iraq.
Yes.
You know, this could be a U.S. senator jumping up and down on the floor saying that the Iraqis have weapons of mass destruction, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's only a current illustration.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the same thing happened when the Lusitania was sunk.
Right.
And the same thing happened when the Maine was sunk.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably, it was actually an accidental explosion.
Right.
And it's yellow journalism and senators that are warmongering, and this is the same thing.
That's right.
And this race repeats it over and over again in history.
Okay, I believe Guest 22 has a question or comment. Are you there, Guest 22?
Yes, I am.
You have a question or comment, or are you just listening?
Yeah, I had a comment. I took issue with what, I don't know which one of you gentlemen said that. I think that the violence and the death that's been perpetrated by Jews, Christians, and Muslims is abhorrent. I believe it's an offense against God.
Sure.
For all of you to be and acknowledge that you are sons of the children of Abraham, and the outright massacre, the lies, the destruction that you carried on for thousands of years, when God comes back, he's going to punish you all. And the leaders, if that's what you are, and I'm talking to the mullahs, the imams, the pastors, the rabbis.
They're
all
children of Abraham. The rabbis aren't children of Abraham.
I'm not getting into that. What I'm saying, because you choose, as Christians, Jews, and Muslims, not to lead people out of darkness, not to act and do as Jesus did.
Are you suggesting we're Jews and Muslims?
Jews and Muslims can't lead people out of darkness.
I am telling you.
That's absolutely crazy. I'm telling you, you're nuts.
God.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Okay.
There's one God.
Thank
He's not the God of Jews and Muslims. Nobody gets to the Father except through Christ.
That's right.
You better go listen to a Jewish program or a Muslim program.
That person sounds like an atheist. Okay, let's continue.
Nobody gets to the Father except through Christ.
Well, the first
Judaism
obviously
is a false religion. Islam is a false religion. They're idol worshippers. They're not sheep.
Right.
And they can't be Christians anyway.
Well, he seems to be suggesting that we advocate the slaughter of the... Well, no, we don't. It's the Jews responsible for that. So
absolutely.
Here, yes. Yes. Okay.
The Jewish popes and the Jewish bankers of Europe have been responsible for all of our wars.
That's right. That's right.
Every one of them.
Yeah. As I mentioned before the show started, I was really surprised because I happened to glance through Stephen Collins' book, Parthia, and the major mistake that Stephen Collins makes is he constantly identifies the Judahites with the Jews. And, of course, the Jews are always Edomites, Canaanites, Khazars, Kenites, etc.
Well, that's who they are.
Yeah, they cannot be equated with the tribe and house of Judah or with Israel. They're simply not the same people. But he seems to understand that the Pharisees are the ones responsible. So, his description of what we've just been talking about here is on page 201 of this book, and it's actually very good. The Pharisees were surely familiar with the prophecies that the Messiah would set up a kingdom of his own. Therefore, it was clear to the Pharisees that if Jesus was the Messiah and was destined to set up a kingdom, he would oust them from their authority. Now, how many Christians understand this? How many Christian ministers understand that he would have ousted them from there? Don't they get this?
No, they don't understand it. That, you know, it's a theme. You know, Christ knew that it was not his turn,
right,
to take the authority of the world back from the children of Cain.
Right.
Okay? But it's also mentioned several times in the gospel that he avoided or escaped from his own followers because they wanted to make him king.
Right.
They expected a Christ, a conquering Messiah who would be king.
Mm-hmm.
They did not understand, and this was a point of contention right from the beginning.
Right.
And this is something that Paul really pushed hard to make people understand, was that the first advent of the Messiah, Yahweh in the flesh, he had to die.
Right.
He had to die at the hands of his enemies,
right,
in order to redeem the children of Israel and fulfill the law.
Exactly.
But the children of Israel didn't understand that.
That's
they
right.
They thought he was coming to be king and to restore the kingdom to Israel.
Right, that's what they were expecting, yeah.
Act 1:6. It's right in Acts chapter 1.
Mm-hmm. And those were Israelites, not Jews.
Right, they were Israelites, and they thought the kingdom should be restored to Israel immediately.
Yes, yes.
They didn't understand the 2,500 years of punishment. They didn't understand all the things, mm-hmm, you know, they were laid out in the Revelation, and I mean, most people still
right
don't understand them.
Sure.
But we have to undertake the trials of this world that we've undertaken.
Yes.
We've had to fulfill this 2,500 years of punishment.
Right.
There's a lot of things that we've had to do as the children of Israel.
Right.
And the other races, the Jews and the Muslims, are a scourge.
Yeah,
they can never be Christians. They can never see God.
Right. Well, we're here to set the record straight and to bring civilization to this planet if the Jews would only let us. But they won't let us. Let me continue here. Obsessed by their desire to cling to their temporal power, they, the Pharisees, determined to slay Jesus to prevent the loss of their status, even if it meant killing the Messiah. So what he's saying here is they were fully conscious of what they were doing. It was no mistake. It wasn't an accident. Oh, well, we didn't realize he was the Messiah.
Right. They absolutely knew what he was doing. They wanted to kill him from the moment his birth was announced.
That's right. That's right. He continues, in arranging the execution of Jesus, they actually fulfilled the prophecies pertaining to the Messiah's betrayal and death. Matthew 26:15 fulfilled Zechariah 11:12's prophecy about the 30 pieces of silver. And Jesus' death to redeem mankind, of course he uses mankind, which we mean the white race, fulfilled...
Well, Adamkind. That's
yes,
what it
Adamkind
is, Adamkind.
Exactly. Fulfilled the messianic prophecy of Daniel 9:26 that the Messiah would be cut off, but not for himself. So Stephen Collins fully understands this, okay? But now
he gets most of the story right. He just screws up when he says the Jews of Judah.
That's right. Well, in the next paragraph, he says this. This first possible explanation suggests that the Jewish leaders did not really respect the scriptures or fear God. Well, of course they didn't, because they weren't Israelites.
Right. They're Edomites, and
that's
clear
right
in history.
That's right. And so what he's doing, he's promoting this false notion that everywhere says, well, there's good Jews and there's bad Jews, and these were the bad Jews that put Jesus to death. The good Jews would never do that. Bill G., are you with us?
Yes, Eli. Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to say hello to you and Bill and all the saints on the board. I wanted you at least one time to hear my voice live.
All right.
You don't know how much I am so grateful that you guys are out here. I have so much to learn. I am so grateful that I found you, and I feel like I'm home. And thank you so much, and Yahweh bless.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Those words of encouragement. Very much appreciated, Bill.
You're entirely welcome.
Okay. Thank you. Praise Yahweh. Okay. All right. So it's obvious that this guy, Stephen Collins, has the part of the truth, but the failing is that this notion that there's good Jews and bad Jews, and the bad Jews are the ones that put Messiah to death, and the good Jews would never do any such thing. No. Name me one Jew in this world who supports Messiah. Name me one.
The Jews for Jesus, but they twist the word.
That's right. They twist it.
They're universalists, and they're only Jews for Jesus so they could pervert Christianity.
That's right.
Just like, a lot of them popes and the DiMedicis were only Jews for Jesus.
Right.
They were popes, and they perverted Christianity.
Right, yeah. There's so much perversion of the scriptures and of history. And, I was hoping to have more time to glance through Colin's book to see whether at all he talks about Edomites. You know, and the last thing the Jews want to talk about is Edomites, because they know they're Edomites.
The only thing I really know Collins from is Clifton Emma Heiss's pamphlets on Stephen Collins's Pretzel Factory.
Yeah.
And I trust that Clifton correctly quoted Mr. Collins.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and those Bible analysts who refuse to discuss the Edomite question and how the Edomites took control of our country, Judah, during the days of John Hyrcanus. People, you know, the Christian, so-called Christian ministers who refuse to discuss the Edomite coup that happened in those days are simply covering up for the Jews, because that's who these people are. They're Edomites. They're not Judahites. And the confusion comes in because the word Jew is translated from the word Judean, which simply means resident or citizen of a country. It's not referring to either the tribe of Judah or to the tribe of Idumea. It's simply talking about people who live in the land.
Anybody today that wants to make apologies for Jews and Arabs is making apologies for the devil.
That's right. Well, who's killing? Who's
That's
killing the white race?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Killing the right. You know, the Arabs were taking white Europeans into slavery,
right,
in Africa for 500 years.
Mm-hmm.
Before any Negro slave was ever brought to America.
Right, right.
Okay?
And it was Jewish folks that were bringing them here.
The Jews invited Arabs into Spain to destroy the Gothic nation in Spain. 1,300 years ago.
Yes.
That happened.
Right.
And it's a matter of historical record that the Jews did it, and they were responsible for it.
Right.
And they tried to destroy all Europe using the Arabs,
mm-hmm,
against the Christians.
That's right. That's
the
right.
Jews, as Martin Luther wrote, it was the Jews that opened up the cities, the Jewish merchants opened up the cities of Eastern Europe to the hordes of,
right,
Genghis Khan.
In the middle of the night, that's why they wore yellow armbands, so that the Moors, once the gates were thrown open in the middle of the night where the Christians were asleep, the Jews wearing yellow armbands would open the gates to the towns and cities and let the Moors in the middle of the night, totally surprising the Christians.
You know, scripture is perfect. The Jews are the serpent, the Jews are the devil, and the Muslim hordes and the Mongol hordes, they are the stream of vomit from the mouth of the serpent.
Okay, yeah.
That's exactly what they are, as it's written in the Revelation.
Yes.
Anybody who is an apologist for the Muslims and the Jews is an apologist for the devil and vomit,
mm-hmm,
period.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they certainly have no sympathy for our race. And, you know, as we were talking about at the beginning of the show, it was our people that have created civilization. And those people, you know, let me put it this way. The Arabs and Muslims that have come into the white nations have come here to get away from the oppression of their own imams.
Well, the Jewish media, they want to give people the impression that the Arabs invented algebra and it has an Arab name because,
yeah,
of that, and,
right,
and that the Arabs had a high level of civilization 1,000 years ago.
Okay.
And what really happened was the Arabs had conquered, raped, looted, and pillaged lands that were Greek and Roman.
Right.
And all the learning of the Arab world,
mm-hmm,
up until the time that their civilization started to decline,
right,
around the 11th century, was a remnant of the Greco-Roman culture that they conquered.
Mm-hmm.
And when the genes ran out, they reverted back to the Stone Age.
Right.
And they've been in the Stone Age ever since. The only reason why they have anything today is because of Anglo-American oil money.
Right.
Period.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, Matthew 27. You have listed here verses 1 through 26. I'll just start reading and interrupt me whenever you feel the need, okay? When the morning was come And all the chief priests and elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. Now, of course, this elders of the people, it sounds like it's saying, you know, that the people were involved, but it says the elders of the people. And we know, we already discussed the fact that the Herodians had a deal with the Romans to put their own people in as elders. And it's possible that Herod might have picked a Judahite or a Benjamite. It's not likely. He may have.
Oh, it's highly unlikely. And if he did, it's just like, say,
like Hillary Clinton.
Well, even if she is even if she's not a Jew, it's just like her or any
right.
one of those.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of Tom Harkin. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of clearly white men in Washington,
mm-hmm.
but they're nothing but shills for the Jews and the Zionists.
That's right.
You know, they're no better than Jews themselves.
Right. So Bill and Hillary are one of the best teams for the Jews that ever existed.
Exactly.
Right.
And Rahm Emanuel got his first job in Washington, his first job in the White House under Bill Clinton.
Right. Right. Yeah, and he's one of the most powerful Zionists in the world. And his
right.
brother. And even the mainstream media is referring to his brother as Dr. Death because he supports euthanasia. Hey,
yeah,
folks.
Well, they, you know, Jews, all of these these odious platforms that come out in mainstream society, there were Jews behind all of them.
That's right. Yeah,
every
homosexuality,
one of them.
Feminism,
gay marriage, the whole
abortion.
Thing.
All of it. Yeah, the Jews are running all of it. It's just one gigantic con game and destruction of our society. Absolutely.
They are the epitome of everything that is satanic.
Yeah. And
they are that as a group.
Right.
It's the whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
The religious ones, the non-religious ones, it don't matter.
Right, right. Well, even the so-called good Jews, the ones who aren't actively stealing, robbing, and murdering us, they are supporting the ones who do.
Absolutely.
None of these people are coming out and saying, hey, it's our religion that's evil. It's our culture that's evil. No, you people are oppressing us. What? We're oppressing you? Who's got all the money? Who runs everything? Who controls the CIA? The government, the media. It's certainly not us.
That's why Jews love to read. They love to read the right-wing literature because it's all good news for them.
That's right. they can quote us and call us racist. Okay. Oh, I think I clicked on the wrong button here. I'm trying to recognize one of Yahweh's children.
I'm sorry. I have to address something. Somebody asked about David Icke saying that all this is an occult society. You know, David Icke, and that's how I'm going to pronounce his name, he sells an awful lot of books for some idiot over on the Isle of Man in Britain
yeah.
that nobody ever heard of 15 years ago. He suddenly sells a lot of books. He has all the money he needs to publish all the books he needs. He is another Rothschild front.
Sure.
You know, these people come out with a couple of lame conspiracy theories, and they get the whole right-wing internet community following after him.
Right, right.
David Icke is a Rothschild shill. He's leading
right.
you all down the path of destruction.
Well, yeah, because his basic argument is that the evil behind all the everything that's wrong in the world are these reptilian people that kind
right.
of materialize out of nowhere and then go back to nowhere. And he won't say they're Jews. He won't say that.
David Icke, William Henry, Graham Hancock, the whole damned Art Bell crowd.
Right.
They're all a bunch of Rothschild shills.
That's right. That's right. Yes. And so is Glenn Beck.
Absolutely. The whole mainstream media. Don't
put
your trust in any of those people.
That's right. They're all shills for the Jews, no doubt about it. Okay. Still trying to recognize one of Yahweh's chosen. For some reason, it's not working. Oh, there we go. You calling in or just listening? Hello? Okay, no, nobody there. All right, so where
David
was I?
David Icke is a distraction to get people not to think about the Jews.
That's right, of course. Of course. Yeah, well, I have heard many people on the Art Bell show and I'm trying to think of the other guy. He's more on the internet. But these shills, they go out of their way to avoid talking about the Rothschilds.
Absolutely. When
it's so obvious that the Rothschilds are the power behind Satan's throne.
Right, and it's not only the Rothschilds. I mean, the Rothschilds are the leading family.
Right.
But there's a large community of Jewish banking families.
Oh, yeah.
And they have funded all of these left-wing Jewish professorships.
Yes.
They have funded all these synagogues. They are the source of money for world Judaism.
Right, right.
And they propagate themselves, and they propagate their agenda.
Right.
And it's not a mistake.
Right. Greg says there's bad Jews and worse Jews.
Yeah, they're all bad. The only good Jews I know died of typhus at Auschwitz.
Yes, right. And they weren't gassed because the Germans didn't have the fuel to do it.
You know, it's not a mistake. That I mean, I'm not trying to get political because I reject it all.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a mistake that I'd say like 60% of the Italians, all the Sicilians and the Southern Italians, most of the Spanish people that are here, along with the Latinos, the Jews, the Negroes, they all vote. 90% of them vote Democratic.
Right. Jewish.
They voted
Jewish.
A solid
yeah.
block.
Mm-hmm.
And it's if you discounted all of the you know, these minorities, or whatever you want to call them, these racial aliens in our lands,
mm-hmm.
they have moved the political center far to the left.
That's right.
The center is leftist now.
Yes, exactly.
And the extreme right was normal thinking 100 years ago.
That's right.
We are not extremists.
Yeah.
100 years ago, we'd have fit right into the middle of the political spectrum.
Right, and then they've taken over the right as well by making it Zionist, the Christian Zionists represent the right.
Right, absolutely Zionist, and it's not right. It's not even a political spectrum. It's
right, and the true constitutional patriot is called a terrorist.
Right, but the presence of all these aliens has swung the political thinking and the political spectrum in this country,
right.
and in all Western countries, far to the left.
Yes, well,
the middle has moved to the far left.
Yes, exactly. Well, as Benjamin Franklin said, democracy is two wolves and a sheep voting on what's for dinner.
Absolutely.
Yes, and that's where we're at. Okay, verse 3, where chapter, actually, let me just start all over again. Chapter 27, verse 1, when the morning was come, all the chief priests and elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. It says, the elders, it doesn't say anything about Romans, folks. And when they had bound him, they led him away and delivered him to Pontius Pilate. Now we get to a Roman governor here. Then Judas, which had betrayed him when he saw that he was condemned, repented himself and brought again the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, I have sinned in that I have betrayed the innocent blood. And they said, what is that to us? See you to that. And he cast down the pieces of silver in the temple and departed and went and hanged himself.
And here we have an Edomite with a feeling of remorse. That's a rare thing.
It's very rare.
But it happens. And he probably realized that he did kill
right.
God.
Well, you know, he should have gone to Pilate and say, I have wrongfully condemned this man, instead of just going out and hanging himself.
Well, he wasn't part of the show trial.
Right.
And he only betrayed him by telling them where they could find him.
Right.
And where they could seize him
yes.
without having thousands of his followers around.
Yes, yes. Well, they will all repent very soon. Verse 6, and the chief priests took the silver pieces and said, it is not lawful for to put them in the treasury because it is the price of blood. And they took counsel and bought with them, that is the 30 pieces of silver, the potter's field to bury strangers in, wherefore that field was called the field of blood to this day.
Right. I'd like to say something about this in Acts chapter 1. You know, a lot of people point out a disparity in the Bible, and that's not true at all.
Okay.
In Acts chapter 1, it says that Judas, you know, he was thrown down in his field and his guts exploded.
Right.
And but that's not how he died. That happened after he hanged himself.
Okay, yeah.
If you know anything about what happens to the human body after it's hanged, you'll understand that the fluids go down into the belly and it'll burst real easy after it's been hanging for a day or two and then you're thrown in the field.
Oh, okay, sure.
And he was thrown down, face down into this field, and His skin burst.
Yes.
His dead skin burst, and the fluids came out.
Or the rope could have let loose because, as he hanged himself, you know, and maybe he didn't tie the knot very
well. Right,
he didn't
and that's
catch
a possibility
it very well.
Too, if he hanged himself in a field. But if it's really a field, it's hard to hang yourself in a field.
Right.
I mean, if it's an open field, there's no
yeah.
trees to hang.
Yeah,
it depends on the interpretation. But the point I'm trying to make is that the two versions of the script, it's not two different versions, it's just two parts of the same story.
Right, exactly.
He
yeah,
hung
yeah.
himself, and later on he was cast down in the field and burst
yeah,
open.
Right. Yeah, you have to approach this the scriptures as if there were a trial going on. The testimony does not contradict each other. It may sound like it, but you have to, you know, realize, hey, it's two different episodes of a particular sequence of events. That's what it
Absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely.
Yes.
That's exactly what it is.
Yes. And they took counsel, verse 7, and brought with them the potter's field to bury strangers in, wherefore that field was called the field of blood to this day. Then was fulfilled that which was spoken by Jeremiah the prophet, saying, and they took the 30 pieces of silver, the price of him that was valued, whom they of the children of Israel did value. Now, it's interesting because the other verse says, he came into his own, and his own received him not. And we've been talking a lot about the fact that the Israelites of Judea at this time, and even the apostles themselves, didn't understand what was getting ready to happen, did they?
No, they didn't. They didn't understand what was getting ready to happen until it happened.
Yes,
they couldn't believe what was going on.
That's right. They couldn't believe.
And,
so
and they didn't. You know, it took. They didn't even recall Christ's words concerning it until after it happened. And
right.
Oh wow, he told us this was going to happen.
Yes.
Well, that's you know,
right.
It shows that if Yahweh
right.
does not want you to know something. There's no way you're going to know it or realize what's going on.
Yes.
Until Yahweh wants you to know what's going on.
And it's proven by the fact that when he was crucified, only his mother, Mary Magdalene, and a couple of the apostles, maybe a handful of people at the most, were actually there to support him at the crucifixion. Other than that, he was entirely alone. The Israelite world didn't even understand, didn't know what was happening, didn't understand that their kinsman redeemer had come to lift the curse of Adam and Eve's sin, and of course in our refusal to obey our oath that we took at Sinai to obey Yahweh's law.
Absolutely.
Our people, and isn't it true, Bill? And this is the sorry part about it. Our people still don't get it.
They still don't get it.
Yeah, if Jesus Christ were to come back today, they would call him a Jew hater.
Yeah, they probably would.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing is, people don't take it upon themselves to learn anything.
Yeah.
They just believe what they're told, they accept it as truth and fact, and they go on with their lives.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Until they run into the brick wall or the earthquake starts, and then they curse God. You know, what did I do? What haven't you done? You haven't done anything right in the last 2,000 years, and you expect me to be happy with you? Wow. Okay. Verse, let's see.
It's sort of like if you bought a car, and in the owner's manual it said, do not go 80 miles an hour or the engine will blow up.
Right.
The salesman just wants to sell you the car.
Yeah.
And he's not going to tell you that.
Right.
Oh, this baby's fast. It'll speed. It'll do anything you want. Oh, buy the car. And you never open that owner's manual.
Mm-hmm.
And you take the car out and you do 80 miles an hour and the engine blows up.
Right.
And you go blame the salesman. But you didn't read the owner's manual.
Right.
That's religion today. It's crazy.
Well, I believe that, typically having been brought up a Catholic, I can tell you point blank that the Catholic Church never encouraged me or any of my fellow, young teenage students or preteen students to read the Bible. You know, I left the church when I was 17, and I've talked with many other Catholics, and they all say the same thing. The Catholic Church never requires you to to read the Bible.
I did. You know, I must have been in high school before I realized that you could read the Bible.
Yeah. Right.
We were given a catechism. In
right. A catechism. Right.
Well, we never saw a Bible. I never saw a Bible.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's just not done. Catholics don't read their Bibles. That's the priest's job to read the Bible. Your job as a Catholic is to do what the priests tell you to do.
Absolutely. That's what it is.
That's right. That's right. Verse 11, and Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, saying, are you the king of the Judeans? And Jesus said to him, you say. And when he was accused of the chief priests and elders, he answered nothing. Now, it's interesting. Let me just back up, because the proper translation of this word Jews, as it occurs here in verse 11 in the King James, is Judeans. Are you the king of the Judeans? And actually, if he had answered that honestly, he would say, no, I'm the king of Israel. He's not the king of the Edomites. He's not the king of all the residents of Judea. They're not his people. He's king of his people.
Right.
Okay?
And I mean, we could split hairs about that all day. But basically, he never made the claim
right.
that he was the king of anything.
Right. And so therefore, when they nailed the sign on top of the cross, INRI, here's king of Judea, he never made that claim.
Right, you know, we actually perceived that from our Catholic schoolboy years to actually be a sign that said INRI.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, but Luke, I think, is actually perfectly clear that Pilate wrote out, here is the king of the Judeans.
Right.
In three languages.
Okay.
Greek, Aramaic or Hebrew, and Latin.
Okay.
In all three languages, he wrote it out.
Yes.
It didn't, you know, INRI, that could mean
right,
nailed
that's
right
the,
in.
That's just initials, yes.
Yeah, and it's the initials in Latin for Jesus Nazareth Rex Judaea.
Right.
Or, you know, Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews.
Yes, right. And so, you know, we make a distinction, again, between Judahites and Judeans, which we have to, because the Judeans are simply citizens of a country, as all Americans today can be of any race. Right? Whereas, you know, the original citizens
Judea
of this country were white.
Judea was actually just like America is today.
That's right.
It was racially mixed with the Pharisees in charge, just
yes.
like America is today.
Yeah, it's
the
racially
Edomite
mixed
Pharisees.
With the Jews in charge. Exactly.
Same thing then.
That's
same
right.
thing now.
Yeah, the Judean parallels are striking. The same thing's happening today.
And that's why I believe the time is near.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, because... how long, you know, they've totally taken over our society. They're oppressing our people, Israel, to the point where, you know, they've disenfranchised it. We're the ones paying the taxes to pay for everybody else's welfare, okay? Nothing, you know, our Social Security is being given to illegal aliens. Okay, all the work that the white race has put into this country has simply been stolen from us by the Jews, and what's left? What's left to destroy except our physical bodies?
Right, and we bought this. We as a people more or less bought this. I mean, in the early 1900s, there were large amounts of immigration occurring of Eastern Europeans and Southern Europeans who are inclined to be socialists
yes.
and liberals.
Right.
And they all voted Democratic, but the numbers of them weren't that great. A lot of true white people had to vote for Franklin Roosevelt and the New Deal.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pure socialism.
Right.
A lot of true white people had to vote for Woodrow Wilson, who just flat out lied.
Right.
About everything he was going to do.
That's right.
And you know, in order to get him in, the Jews did split the vote.
That's right.
By running Teddy Roosevelt.
Yes.
And that hurt the Republican cause.
Right.
However.
Yeah, it was William Jennings Bryan would have probably been president had they not done that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, they got Taft out by running Roosevelt, and then mm-hmm. they got Bryan Wilson
right.
in by running.
Yeah. No, that's right. It was Bull Moose Party by Roosevelt.
Yeah, Theodore
yeah.
Roosevelt. Okay, yeah.
Theodore.
Bryan was Bryan ran against Roosevelt in the primary, I think.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah, in the primary, and I'm sorry, against Wilson. And Wilson got the nomination, and he would have been beat by Taft.
Yes.
However, they ran Teddy Roosevelt in the Bull Moose Party.
Right.
And Wilson was like Clinton, and it was like Clinton and Perot all over again.
Exactly, exactly. And with their money, they can create a party instantly.
Right. And it was the same sort of flamboyant personality.
Yeah.
Teddy Roosevelt and Ross Perot.
Mm-hmm.
And some Frenchman just said the same thing I said. I just looked at the forum, and he was typing it as I was saying it.
Right.
So,
exactly.
So it had to be true.
Itself.
Yeah. Yeah. It's they divide the spoil. Everything's calculated. Wall Street isn't. You know, that's why people like David Icke publish these books, and people follow him, thinking that he's contrary to the establishment.
Yeah.
He has to be telling the truth.
Right.
And the point is that the Jews aren't going to let you occupy the space on the shelves of their bookstores.
Right.
Unless you're doing what they want you to do.
Exactly.
Period.
Yes. It's disinformation.
Absolutely.
It simply points you in still another wrong direction. When the heart of the beast is the international Jew. Absolutely no doubt about it. Okay, let's continue here. Verse 12. And when he was accused of the chief priests and elders, he was not accused by the Romans, folks, by the chief priests and elders, he answered nothing.
No, this is all a political trial to get Roman approval on their murder of Christ.
Right, because
the Romans
won't allow them to put a man to death. So they have to make a scene. They have to create a scene and put Pontius Pilate in a ridiculous position between a rock and a hard place that he can't get out of. Okay, verse.
Absolutely,
six.
And yeah. And there's something that you just, and it's important. You know, Paul was taken prisoner, and he was a Roman citizen.
Yes,
and he had recourse to appeal to Caesar because he was born in Tarsus, a Roman citizen.
Mm-hmm.
But Yahshua was born in Galilee.
Yes.
He was not a Roman citizen. So he had no recourse to appeal to Caesar.
Right.
In other words, even if he wanted to, he wasn't getting out of this.
Right, right.
He had no recourse of an appeal because he was not a Roman citizen.
Yeah, he had no legal out in any way. Pilate was trying his best to give it to him. Verse 13, then said Pilate to him, "Hear you not how many things they witness against you?" And he answered him to never a word, insomuch that the governor marveled greatly. Why isn't he defending himself, is what Pontius Pilate is thinking to himself. Verse 15, now at that feast the governor was wont to release to the people a prisoner whom they would, and they had then a notable prisoner called Barabbas. Therefore, when they were gathered together, Pilate said to them, "Whom will you that I release to you? Barabbas or Jesus, which is called Christ?" He was trying to get Jesus off.
Yes, Pilate was actively trying to get Christ off. He did everything. If you understand the political climate at the time and the position Pilate was in, you know, he's in a precarious position because these Jews have a lot of influence in Rome.
Right. The moneylenders.
Absolutely. And he can't get them too angry with him.
Right.
And he has to, his duty is to make sure that the law, the Roman law,
right,
is abided by. And he tries his best to get Yahshua a fair trial and to get him off.
Right.
And he can't do it because the Jews want him to die.
Yeah.
And eventually he has to accede to their wishes.
Right. Okay, verse 18. For he knew that for envy they had delivered him. Okay.
Right. Pilate knew
what
their motives were.
Yeah. Describing
no doubt.
Pharisees. Yeah. Verse 19, when he was set down on the judgment seat, his wife sent to him, saying, "Have you nothing to have you?" This is more cumbersome. "Do have nothing to do with that just man." Just man, she says. Even she understood he was a just man. "For I have suffered many things this day in a dream because of him." Okay, you were going to say something?
Well, yeah, I was going to say something. It's a statement that's difficult to understand, but she's telling him to have nothing to do with him.
Right.
She's
right.
Telling him to wash his hands of the matter.
Right, right. And that's what he eventually does. But the chief priests and elders persuaded the multitude, who? the chief priests and elders, folks. I mean, the Jews are constantly trying to take themselves off the hook by saying it was the Romans that killed Christ. The Romans had nothing to do with it.
Nothing at all. They were only pawns in the game.
That's right. They were caught in the middle. Or Pontius Pilate was caught in the middle.
Absolutely, and the Roman soldiers.
Yes. But the chief priests and elders persuaded the multitude that they should ask Barabbas and destroy Jesus. Can it be any plainer?
And Barabbas was in prison for a sedition and a murder.
Okay.
And that's the type of person they'll let go so they could get
Christ
executed.
Right, exactly. Verse 21, the governor answered and said to them, whether of the two will you that I release to you? They said, Barabbas. Pilate says to them, what shall I do then with Jesus, which is called Christ? They all say to him, let him be crucified. It's not Pilate.
That's actually an imperative, and it's he must be crucified.
Okay.
Should you know, and the King James translators always translated the imperative in that manner, let him be.
Okay.
But it's almost always an imperative, and the imperative is imperative. That's
right.
What it is.
Right. It's more emphatic than the translation. Yes. Okay, verse 23, and the governor said, why, what evil has he done? But they cried out the more, saying, he must be crucified. When Pilate saw that he could prevail nothing, he was trying to get him off. But that rather a tumult was made. He took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. See you to it. How can this be mistaken as anything but Jewish guilt?
Oh, well, they admit their guilt here.
Right.
When you read a few verses on, you'll
well, see. Well, let me continue to verses 25 and 26, and we have one more call, and I have to call it quits after that because I have to get ready for another show. But verses 25 and 26, then answered all the people and said, his blood be on us and on our children. Okay, well, it's not the Romans that are saying this, folks. It's the multitude assembled by the scribes and Pharisees, the Jews.
That's and you know, in the ancient world, they believed, and this is all through the Old Testament, that what affected you affected your children, that vows and statements that you made affected your children.
Right.
We take this very lightly today,
mm-hmm.
But it's absolutely true that the blood of Yahshua Christ is on all of the Jews today.
Right.
Period. They're all responsible for his blood, and they prove it in their actions over and over again anyway.
Right, right. Absolutely, absolutely. If you believe that the Romans killed Christ, you just haven't read your Bible.
Absolutely not.
Right. Okay. All right. I'm going to be on the Rick Adams Show. That's the Republic Broadcasting Network at 9 o'clock, well, actually 10 o'clock Eastern Time. And we have Skip Baker. Skip, you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I noticed that you included Pilate's letter to Caesar in your book. And
right.
I think that's one of the best, because if somebody hasn't read that letter, they really don't see the kind of jam that Pilate was in.
Right.
And he explains it in the letter, how they've got him between a rock and a hard place in three different directions, and he was powerless to do anything.
Right, right. Because the revenue, as Bill explained earlier, the revenue was collected by the Herodians, okay? And Pilate didn't want to disrupt that. Certainly Caesar would say, you mean you upset the tax, our tax collectors?
It's a known fact in history that some of the Herods had a very close relationship with the Caesars.
Right.
And the Caesar at this time is Tiberius. And he's one of the Caesars that they had a close relationship with.
Right, right.
And they were, you know, Herod the Great was an actual king. But with Herod Archelaus, about 8 B.C., Judea was reduced to a province.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they still had the, you know, if the Herod at this time, Herod the Tetrarch, if he still had the designation king, which he was considered a king, but politically the nation was reduced to a province, he didn't have quite all the power as concerning the law that the king had.
Yeah,
Herod the Great could have just had Christ executed without involving the Romans.
Right.
Okay? But at this time, when Judea is reduced to a province, the leadership has no more say of life and death over its citizens.
Right.
And Rome has to get involved under Roman law.
Right, right, yeah. Well, this is what Pilate was absolutely trying to avoid, and he had nothing, and he says, he called him an innocent man. Okay. Yeah.
The other thing.
Yeah. Go ahead.
The other thing so interesting about that letter is that Pilate was astounded to call Christ into his office and see a man with blonde hair and a blonde beard.
Right.
Who looked so different than his listeners.
The Jews in the crowd.
Right.
Yeah. I have to make an admission. I'm a little skeptical about the provenance of the letter of Pilate, but it is very old. There's no doubt that it doesn't date into the early Middle Ages.
Okay.
But I don't know if it's actually authentic and dates back to. I have to be skeptical about that.
I have a report that I haven't posted on a website where an author addresses the skeptics on that issue. And I think he does a really good job. So I'll be posting
it. Well, I'm skeptical of it because I haven't made a full study of it.
Right, okay.
But I'm skeptical of everything I haven't made a full study of.
Right, okay.
However, I haven't.
You're a heathen.
Well, yeah. I haven't, I haven't seen firsthand any early testimony, truly, second century, third century testimony of the veracity of the letter.
Right. It's a highly debated document, that's for sure. Yes. Okay. All right, Skip, thanks for bringing that up. So anybody who wants to read that document, on my website, anglo-saxonisrael.com, and that's Pontius Pilate's letter to Tiberius Caesar. Do you have that on your website now too, Skip?
Yes, I've got it up also.
Okay, that's on skipbaker.com. So, okay, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in. You're a good audience, and even the guy who disagreed with us brought some more fire and brimstone into the program. Not that we needed any more of that.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, and we will be joining you again tomorrow on Yahweh's Covenant People, and Sunday my guest will be Jim Condit, not Gary Condit. I made a mistake on my email. Jim Condit, and we'll be talking about whether China is communist or capitalist, so please tune in. I will be on the Republic Broadcasting Network shortly with Rick Adams. We're going to be talking about the so-called swine flu, okay? So thanks for tuning in, ladies and gentlemen. Yahweh bless, everybody.
Praise Yahweh.
Yahweh bless.
Bye-bye.